Well, this is our second call in the series. We do these cohorts of 10 calls, and each time we kind of focus on different things. Right now, we're looking for the next series of 10 towards the new RFP that will be coming out. Those of you who may be new to this, we work with EPA, HMTRI, Hazardous Materials Training and Research Institute. We position ourselves in between grantees and the federal government, and we're here to try to help where we can and mostly do a lot of networking, peer-to-peer instruction, and try to exchange ideas. And if we find someone who's doing something really good, we encourage them to share it with the group. So we're kind of in a neutral spot, and we try to help those of you who are thinking of starting new programs to decide if it's some thing you want to go forward with and how you might do it, and what the landmines are, what you may want to consider.
I'm on a call, but I'll call you back.
We're just going to listen to this gentleman. I think he just might have missed my announcement that we've got open mic, so you want to be real careful on that. So for those of you that are thinking of starting a program, hopefully these calls will help you decide if you want to go forward or how you might go about it. For those of you who maybe submitted a grant and were not funded this time, we're hoping that we can help you to expand your program. And when the next round of RFPs come out, which will be sometime in June, to submit a killer proposal, it will get you funded on this round. And for those of you who have established program, we hope to just encourage networking so you could showcase your program to help other people from your experience and maybe here and there get a tip that you think might help your program and get to know some of the other grantees. We look at ourselves as a community of grantees. We're not competitive. It's not really a zero-sum game. We just try to exchange ideas and try to improve the programs that we have the best we can. So that's the attitude we take. And we do these every 2 weeks. They're informal calls. We try to keep them around 30 minutes. Our next one will be on March 4th. Today, we're going to be talking about job titles and about where some of the graduates may go once they get through these programs. We always have this formula. We get news from Washington. We talk about what some of the grantees are doing. We talk about the particular topic of the day. And then ask questions or contribute or whatever anyone wants to bring up and talk about. We usually start out with news from Washington. So with that, Heather, any news?
All right. So a couple of different things came in from Washington. No real new news in that sense, but I did bounce some of the questions that came out from the last PLC call that we had a couple weeks ago, and we did get a response back on those ones. One of the questions we had was pertaining to indirect costs. And so what HQ did was just kind of verify again what the status is for sharing some of those indirect costs. And it's basically Brownfields funding has a statutory cap of 5% spending of the total grant funding on administrative costs, including indirect costs. So they're going to pull together a little bit more specific information on this that will bounce back to everybody probably through the listserv whenever we get that. But it's kind of about what we expected, which was there is some indirect costs that are allowable within that 5%, but we can go into a little bit more in depth on that at a later date. Now, the other question that came up, and this was the one that we were trying to figure out how to tread really nicely on, had to do with the fact that if you were a recipient of fiscal year 20 funding, if you could apply for fiscal year 21 funding. In the past, that has not been the case, but remember that last set of RFP was in a really weird way. There was a gap year. There were some odd things that come out. They are thinking that it is probably going to come back again, that the requirement kind of comes back again, that if you had gotten funding the year before, you couldn't get funding in this current year. So if you were a fiscal year 20 recipient of funding, that fiscal year 21 competition would not be open to you. But again, it's not finalized yet. So they're not quite sure yet. That's kind of where they're leaning towards. But again, as we hear additional information on that, we'll be sure to push that out your way. So that was the news from HQ. We also have some news from HMTRI that we wanted to kind of push out to you guys as well. First of all was one that we had mentioned last week, which was our certified employee finder. We are currently in the process of updating that. Now, Bruce Diamond sent out some requests to you guys about providing us with some information really specific on your programs, your students, and different things like that. And what we do is we compile all this information together and we put it in our fantastic document, the certified employee finder. And it's something that, you know, potential employers or folks in the community could actually use to be able to reference and get some good information on the programs that are out there. So we'll include things like the organization name, contact information, what was your most recent year of EPA funding. We also have graduation information. So no matter what, even if your program stayed exactly the same since the last time we put this together, I'm pretty sure your graduation information probably is changing. For example, we might have, you know, on this expected date, you're thinking that there may potentially be X number of graduates become available on this date. And again, that's just kind of to let them know what workforce is coming into their area. Then we include certificates and technical curriculum supported by the EPA, as well as additional life skills and student services provided. And we're also gathering up social media information from you guys all at the same time to put together for the social media directory too. So again, this is just sort of awareness material to put out there. So if you have not replied back to Bruce yet, please go ahead and just send him a real quick email, reply back to that email he sent out to you, so we can get that information put together and get that document out there. Otherwise, you're going to be getting some phone calls here real soon, so we can try to get together whatever we can. So keep an eye out for that. Send me an email if you need it resent to you or anything like that. Please send me an email, hkballou@eicc.edu, and I'll repeat that a couple of times before the end of the day. The other thing that I wanted to share with you is very exciting news from the HMTRI side of things. Again, this is something that we talked a little bit about last time as well, is our annual all-grantee meeting. So this is a fantastic time to get together with folks that are involved in EWDDT. We get everybody all together in one spot, and we have two really intense days of conference programming really specific to the workforce program. So this is held in Alexandria, Virginia, over on the east side of the state, and we'll have EPA folk come in. We'll have a couple other people come in and join us for this type of event as well. Last time, I think we told you we had our proposals out to the hotels, and at this point, I will let you guys know we have confirmed on a date. It is the all-grantee meeting will be August 12th and August 13th. That's a Wednesday and a Thursday, so your travel days will be the days before and day after, but the meeting itself will be August 12th and August 13th in Alexandria, Virginia. The official invite, we're kind of still in the process of signing our names and dotting our T's and crossing our I's, so the official invite will go out as soon as that information gets confirmed, but I wanted to share with you guys at least right away that, you know, put those dates on your calendar. You know, this is an open invitation for any current grantees, prospective grantees, PLC members. If you guys are looking to learn some more information about the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program or try to find ways to really have an opportunity to network and engage with other individuals in that field, this is a fantastic opportunity to do so. HMTRI does cover the lodging costs for the days associated with the meeting, as well as we feed you breakfast and lunch. We've got working meals. So travel and evening meals and any other expenditures would be on you guys, but we handle, like I said, the lodging costs for the days associated with the meetings. So keep an eye out. That invite should come hopefully here shortly, but like I said, we're just waiting until things are officially signed up. But just so you guys know, August 12th and August 13th is the all-grantee meeting.
Okay.
All right, and Mike, yep. I'll pass it back to you.
That is a pretty hard day. Oops, someone just put us on hold, I think. Well, can anyone hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, we're going to have to wait. I have two choices. Oh, okay, please don't put us on hold because it knocks us all out. I try to announce that, but I know it's easy to forget about that and go ahead. We have open mics. And we'll go from there. One thing, this is really a good meeting for those of you who have been there before. It's a lot of networking, and it's a chance where you can get to know each other. And PLC members especially that have not got a grant, Ken, I think you went there one or two years before you got your grant, I believe. Isn't that
correct? Oh, yeah, that was very helpful, too.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, that was very helpful toward us being able to get the grant the following year. So, yeah, that's great. Even though you only have a grant, it's good to participate in those all-grantee meetings.
We all the regional coordinators will be there. And they actually, we use them as facilitators in some of the breakout sessions. The headquarters people are there. And it's just a good time to talk about a lot of the things we talk about in these PLCs, but we get to go face-to-face and kind of bat some ideas around. So it's really a good day. And I think for in terms of job training, if you have an option to travel anywhere, earmark that 12th and 13th of August. And if it's your wedding anniversary or something, you may have to start working early to make up for the fact that you won't be home on the 12th and 13th. And but the travel days are on the 11th and on the 14th. So that week, if you could just,
right.
If you have a calendar, just kind of earmark out the 4 days. And as I said, really the only thing you have to pay for is transportation to Alexandria and then your evening meals. And for the rest of it, it's mostly picked up. Getting back to what Heather said about the all grantee meeting and also the new RFP.
Yeah, buddy's back.
Which we think will come out. And of course, what we say is always open to interpretation and changes. Things can change, but it sounds like the new RFP for it'll be an FY21 RFP. The federal budget goes from October 1 to September 31st. So they have a little different schedule. So it'll be, the funds will actually be spent in federal FY21. Last fall, we did the FY20. So, but the RFP can go out before that time. So we think that may go out around June. And if you apply what's been happening with other RFPs and the way these things work, if the request for proposals go out in June, you have 2 months to write your proposal. And hopefully the nice thing about this cycle is we're going to be from here to June, we're going to be talking about issues that will allow you to respond really well to the ranking criteria of that RFP. For those of you who want to get a feel and have never done this before, you can go to last year's RFP. I'll put those in the notes. The notes will come out on Friday. If for some reason you don't get notes, just send your contact information to Heather. Heather, you want to give that again for
absolutely.
Everyone?
Absolutely. It is HKBALLOU at EICC.edu. Again, HKBALLOU at EICC.edu.
These mailing lists are tricky because sometimes we get bounce backs and they can't deliver. For some reason, if you don't get the notes on Friday, or for some reason, if your email is delayed and they don't come Monday, just resend your contact information to Heather and we'll get you on. For the most part, they go through, but every once in a while we get undeliverables or we get hung up in Outlook or something. So that may happen. But getting back to the grant, the FY21 grant, we're looking at when that grant will be due is probably the end of August. So if you go maybe July, August, it'll be due 60 days after the RFP comes out. Well, that means it goes into the EPA process of review, which takes another couple of months. So now you're talking about awards being made in November or so, around that time. So now we're pretty much, if that's what happens, we're pretty much on the same cycle as we are for the FY20 grantees that we just granted. And if the awards are made in next November or so, by the time you get your work plans, which takes another couple months, you have to get set up and your accounting set up and going through all the administrative issues with the grants office, you're pretty much into January, February. And so now we're talking about you could start planning your first cohort in the spring of next year. So really, to be realistic, for those of you who are just thinking of this, we're laying groundwork and planting seeds now for training that will actually begin next spring and go into next summer, which isn't bad because you could start your training cohorts and then start having them placed in the summertime. That would be a nice target to shoot for. The all these things can slip, but the way we look at it now, that's pretty much. Do we have any grantees on the line that are just starting that were awarded FY20 grants and they're just starting their program? Is anyone out there?
I am. We are at El Centro here in Kansas City.
How did your schedule look? Could you tell us a little bit about your schedule for people who are thinking of applying on this next round? You got your authorization?
I'm really new to the organization as well, but we're slotted to have our first cohort in April. And we've added an additional one. We're thinking about doing one in Spanish. But it's been there was a lot of work done prior to me coming on, so that was very, very helpful as far as leveraging a lot of funding from our partners. And now it's just doing the recruitment and finding more employers as well.
Right. So I think this next round could be very similar to that for those of you who are just starting or were not funded this last cycle. I think it will be a fairly similar schedule. So for those of you who are in your third year or hanging on, a lot of grantees may not get funded for a year or two and then they refund. The trick is to hang into your partners and hang into your infrastructure and your organization to that schedule. And many programs don't get funded or they get their funded interrupted and they have to hang in there for a little while. So, and we really encourage them to do that. The nice thing is if they do not allow FY funded programs to enter this new competition, there will be lots of opportunities. And depending on how much money they get, if they give out 200,000. So if they get 3 million, they'll give out 15 grants. And many of those, there was a lot of competition in the next round, but many of those people who may be towards the end of their old grant and were not able to get funded have a really good chance this round, this cohort of funding. So we really encourage you to hang in there and just we'll be talking about how you might go about expanding your proposal. And it's all about your proposal and what you send in because that's the only thing they have to judge you about. We do like to shout out to some of our grantees, and I'm going to give a brief shout out. Is Santa Fe on the line? Okay, they're not. Well, I'm going to send out a shout out to them. They sent in a little note and just said, for your information, we've been developing a program, and they are one of those grants that was in their third year, and they've got to hang in for a year without EPA funding, and I'm sure they're going to resubmit in spring. But they have a tremendous program. Those of you who know Janet Curley is very knowledgeable about all the aspects of this training program. She developed a training program that Los Alamos is so excited about. They've kind of adopted her program, and they look at it, and they say, this is such a great program. We want to use this as an apprenticeship program in our organization, not necessarily for the same target group you're addressing, but we'd like to use that. And they're fairly proud. They feel, well, we've got a good enough program that people want to copy it. She is a good segue into what I want to talk about today. And because one of the things she said that Los Alamos said that was so complimentary to their program is that you're just not going into job titles. You're just not going into these general environmental technician programs. You're actually going to skill and knowledges. You're teaching your graduates things they need to know to be successful in our organization. And that's exactly what we want to talk about today. One other thing we're going to be putting in the notes will be, of course, the meetings and conferences coming up. This is a season where people are just announcing their regional. Of course, we have the national. Every 2 years, we have this big national conference that a bunch of you had been to. That's the biggie, and it covers all aspects of brownfields. Then, of course, specific to job training, and it's the only one specific to job training, is our all-grantee meeting that we hold usually every August in Alexandria. But also regions and states also have their own local conferences. Some regional offices will put on some workshops. Some regions have associations, they put on workshops. Some states, an outstanding state is Florida. Florida Brownfields Association has their own meetings. Now, these are primarily based at Brownfields, the technical, the cleanup, the financing, but often they have a workforce component, and more they're getting into some workforce components. Well, what about jobs in our associated with our brownfields? And we encourage people in our regions and in our states to see if you could find out about your local brownfields conferences. Now, they're not going to be talking about what we're talking about, and they're not going to be talking about what we do in Alexandria. They're going to be talking about financing. They're going to be talking about cleanup. But what that does is it gets you into the other network. You're already in the network for job training. We want to get you in the network of people that are doing cleanup, financing, people who have where the rubber meets the road. And while we find that there's little in common, there's not a lot in common, except they are great sources for your graduates. They are also great sources as leveraging partners for you. And it's more a matter of networking, letting them know that you exist, where you're at, what you're planning on doing, particularly new grantees. If you're going to be submitting a proposal this summer, late spring, early summer, you can develop a whole lot of partners for your proposal just by going to one of these conferences. And the way you find out about the conferences, we put them in our newsletter, or in our notes. But you could also just Google Brownfields conferences in Georgia, or Brownfields conferences in Louisiana, or Brownfields conferences in Region 4. And it'll show you some things that may not be of interest, and it may show you some that are. Some of these are private conferences, and they charge. Often, though, if you call them up, and often many of them are calling for papers right now because the conferences start in June in Virginia, Tennessee in May, Georgia in August. September is a big month for conferences. But you could submit a paper, and you could also ask for a scholarship and tell them your nonprofit, your job training, would you just like to come and observe and meet some of the people? And often they'll waive your fees. In the case of Florida, they actually provided scholarships to grantees to come to their conference. And that was a great experience where the grantees got scholarships to go, and the great thing about the Florida conference is they were able to network and talk to the employers. And the Florida one is great because almost every environmental employer belongs to that association. So they had access to about 300 employers right off the bat just by going to that conference. So while when you see these in the notes, you might say, well, this doesn't have a lot to do with job training, but we put these in as peripheral items of interest because I think they might be useful to you if you could just try to make contact with them. So let's talk about job titles. And, you know, they call this Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program. It really is not exactly the best title. I like to think of it as the Environmental Justice Workforce and Job Development Training Program. And I want to get you in the right mode, and this is why we're doing this first, before we get into assessment and before we get into recruitment and into the critical issues of developing a good job training program. I want to get you in the mood of who we're training and where they're going and get that attitude. We are in this program. You have to ask, why is this not in the Department of Labor? Why is it in EPA? Everything to do with jobs in the federal government is in the Department of Labor. And indeed, there have been efforts over the last 20 years to try, let's make this a DOL project. And there are some justification for that. But the reason for having it in EPA is twofold. One, it's really comes out of the environmental justice movement, which was very strong a decade or so ago, with the whole NEJAC committee and the whole idea of we need to do something in these underserved communities. And EPA pledged that we will address environmental justice all across the board in our agency. And part of that has to do with getting jobs for people who are underserved in these communities and getting them jobs in these communities. Brownfields is a tremendous economic boom, and there's jobs created, and the people that are hiring people say, we have no trained people. So we bring in people. We'll bring in consultants. We'll bring in remediators, and then we'll leave. And, of course, advocates in environmental justice, well, why can't you provide the skills and knowledges to people who live there who have been victimized by pollution and construction, deconstruction, and have moved away? Why can't those people learn skills that you could use for your employees, and they can be a ready source of a workforce, and you can give them work and give them a future? And it's a win-win situation. The other argument for doing it in EPA is it is an environmental program. It's environmental remediation. And, of course, the argument has always been if you put that into labor, there's a good chance that this is such a niche that it's going to get drowned in the Labor Department. It's a subcategory of other categories, and it's very special. It has a lot to do with not only environmental regs, but health and safety regs, very specific to this particular agency on how to clean up. And so rather than getting lost in a large program with probably lots of funding, they have fought a lot to try to keep this within EPA and keeping it a small program. And that is why it's only $3 or $4 million a year. They've intentionally tried to keep it small, keep it under the radar, keep it focused on environment and environmental remediation and hopefully brownfields and environmental justice. So as you go through, as you write your proposals, as you think about whether you want to start a program or how you're going to do it, think about environmental justice first. Think about environmental jobs second. And then from there, we want to go to the obvious question. Okay, well, you're telling me we're going to train environmental technicians. Well, what's an environmental technician? What the heck is this? In fact, you know, I've met a lot of environmental technicians, but I couldn't tell you by that name what they do or what kind of jobs, what did they make or anything. And a lot of people have tried. We've struggled with job descriptions for ages. And after hitting our heads against the wall, there's the Office of State Merit Systems, which have job titles. There's the Department of Labor has a big one. It's called ONET. And I'm going to put these URLs on the notes. But Occupational Informational Network is the biggie. That's the Department of Labor. And they have gone into this big time. They've tried to define every job there is in the world. And when you go into ONET, it'll give you an assigned number to that job title. It'll give you the job description, what that person does. It'll tell you how much they make. It'll send you to the employment trends. It'll send you everywhere. They've invested, I don't expect billions of dollars over the many years in trying to nail down all these job titles. They've got every job title there is. And that's Department of Labor, which is what they do. There have been other agencies that have wrestled with this. I mentioned Office of State Merit Systems. There's also the Department of Commerce that has tried to do some things, and Occupational Outlooks, where they've tried to make more general categories. But the one you want to look at is ONET. When we got into the business as HMTRI, and we were assigned originally with developing curriculum for environmental technicians, we wrestled with this idea, what is an environmental technician? And we came up with the realization that it's really all about skills and knowledges. It doesn't matter what you call someone. It has more to do with what skills does he have and what knowledges can he do and can he do the job? And when you go beyond that, you're just assigning whatever those skill and knowledge sets with a name. And that name may vary from place to place. And this is important when you're developing your program and you're starting to do your, and we're going to be talking about assessments in the next weeks. But when you start doing a survey of how many environmental technicians are you going to hire, well, none. We don't have an environmental technician. Well, how many people need a do you ever go on hazardous waste sites? Oh, yeah, we go on them all the time. Well, do you realize that you have to have 1910-120 HAZWOPR to get on that site? Oh, yeah, we need that. We need people that have that. Or we go into confined spaces, or we're painters, but, oh, by the way, we work in buildings that have lead in them, or we do asbestos work. But is that an environmental technician? Well, you know, in a general sense, we call all those things environmental technicians. So you could go to any occupation, and we've done this, and we try to, we call them DACOMs. Some people call them job descriptors, but we try to go zero down on what skills and knowledges do you need to do some of these jobs. But, you know, you could categorize these into an area like material handlers. And there's tons of titles, materials handler. You've got people like with CDL, Class B, waste haulers. That's certainly an environmental technician. Tow truck operators, forklift operators. And you're saying, well, what's forklift operators have to do? Well, if you're a forklift driver and you're working with hazardous materials, you've got to have 1910-120. If you're driving a truck and you're carrying hazardous materials, do you have spill response? You could be a dock worker, but you're working at the hazardous materials site, explosive foundry, a foundry operator. You could be a laborer. And in fact, one of the big employers of hazardous materials technicians would be a laborer. The laborers union is big in health and safety. They have one of the largest NIHS grants that are out there. You could be a supervisor of some sort, a waste management technician. All of those titles will just fall under just one category of material handlers. Recycling is another one. All sorts of, you could have a dozen titles under recycling by itself, whether it's a scrapyard or recycling like Ken has. You could do all kinds of sub-job descriptors. You might be in just flat-out remediation, whether it's spill response, demolition. You might be cleaning up. You might be on a hazmat team. You might be on a brownfield site or a Superfund site, and you're doing flat-out remediation. Again, you're going to need certain skills and knowledges and certifications. You might be a safety officer. You might get hired as a safety inspector. You might be hired by a foundry or a large company or UPS as a safety officer. And again, is this environment, does this belong in EPA? Well, you may have some construction health and safety skills that will bring you into that occupation. You may have OSHA 10, and you may be working in a development firm or construction company that's working around a building, then they need someone that's got some background in health and safety and some working knowledge of environmental regs. You might be in production. You might be on a production line. But again, you may have issues regarding health and safety. You could be in security. You might be a security guard. Again, there might be hazardous materials in that area. Or you may be a flagger, and you're flagging trucks that are coming into a waste site. And, oh, by the way, you might be on that waste site. And, again, you need HAZWOPR. So I can go on and on, and we try to keep these short. But what I'm trying to get to you is you've got to go by skills, knowledges, certifications that your program is going to be offering. And I would go even beyond skills and knowledges. I would go on to vetting and life skills. And this is why we're doing it now. When you start doing your initial assessments, which we'll talk about later, you start doing your labor market assessments. You can't go into doing surveys of how many environmental technicians you need. You've got to go to your employers, and you've got to do something like, do you handle hazardous waste? Do you go into confined spaces? Do you transport materials? Do you have safety issues in construction? Are you, obvious ones, do you work with asbestos or lead? Then we have a program you might be interested in. It's not the survey of how many environmental technicians you need, because they're not going to say anything. A few will. You'll get the environmental consultants, but you're not going to get the true value of the occupations over open. We've got HMTRI did a scan, which we're going to do in the next newsletter, which will come out later this month. We're going to get into this in a little deeper, but we'll publish the results of our scan. But you're going to see every job title that you could imagine: hospital workers, nurses, and of course now with the coronavirus, this has become a big deal. In fact, NIHS, which is a sister program of ours, their worker training program was they were very concerned about Ebola, and I'm sure now they're concerned about this virus going around. The skills that you use to do fit up and putting on, donning, and taking off your hazmat suits are the same skills you'll need for virus control. It might be slightly different equipment, but basically the same skill and knowledge requirements. So you might be working with biohazard, bloodborne pathogens, disposal of organs, or disposal of hazardous waste, and maybe they did not get that course in your program, but you gave them the introduction and you gave them the background, and they're interested in this whole area of environmental restoration, hazardous materials, health and safety. That will get them into the door where they'll learn the specifics of that particular organization. In fact, even HAZWOP or HAZMAT, 892 and 120, you teach them the general, but at the end, the particular company they go to work for is going to have very much particulars about their processes. So what I've been saying here on this whole discussion of job titles is, okay, job titles are fine, and you can go to ONET, and you can look through hundreds of, you could look up different things about different environmental jobs, and if you need a job title, you could go into ONET, and you could get the job title, the job description, you can get the salaries, you can get all kinds of things, and you could refer to them as that. But in the end, it's going to be what your program is providing that person who came off the street with, which includes vetting, life skills, whether it's drug-free certification that he will be drug-free, and attitude. He had perhaps had life skills courses in terms of financial management, being on time, being reliable, being a team member, and oh, by the way, also had the environmental courses, the health and safety courses, and we're going to talk later about what should those courses be when we talk about curriculum and needs assessment, and we'll get into the weeds later, but today I just wanted to set the tone on why we're doing what we're doing and where our people are going. So keep an open mind that they can go anywhere as long as you prepare them and match their skills with the skills that your employers might need. So does anyone have any feelings about this and their experiences of what they've come up across when working with employers and job titles? Any ideas of, and I know often employers want job titles. They want, you know, well, what is he? You know, what is he? And if you could avoid that conversation and say, well, this is what he is, but these are the certifications he has, and this is what he's trained in, and this is how we train our people. You know, that's where you want to go with this. Any comments about that whole area?
Well, you know, this is Ken. It just depends on the employer. Just say, like, I may deal with some chemical manufacturer companies or distributors, and they need someone that is skilled in SDS sheets and how to handle certain chemicals and store them. And so I may ask, you know, what is their job description or job title for an individual that handles those types of material and been trained and MSDS and SDS sheets. So it's kind of employer driven based upon the company, like this is a chemical manufacturing company, you know, I may use environmental technician or material handler as a job description, what he's doing at our facility. So it just kind of depends on.
Yeah, you're kind of working. You're working backwards, which is a good idea. In
yeah.
other words, go to employers and say, "What are the skill requirements? Do you have a job description of people you're looking for?" And if they could send you those, then you could scan through that job descriptor, and actually goes back to curriculum. You're actually into what we call the needs assessment
yeah.
Phase of you work backwards. Whether you go to a chemical company or you go to a painting company or a manufacturing, you know, you got. I see you're hiring production workers. What are the? Can you send me a job description? And they might
yeah.
have that, and that might influence your curriculum as you go backwards.
It does, and that's, you know, I'm not the job developer or the job coordinator here, but we kind of work hand in hand,
yeah.
and just try to have our employees to be prepared with three different types of resumes.
Yeah,
good
know, idea.
So, yeah,
we had a grantee in Palo Alto one time, and they were approached by a tank manufacturer, and they said if you could train someone with these skills, mostly confined space, hazmat. We'll hire all of them. That might have been a one-shot deal and not something you want to get into because what happens when they're all hired or something happens at a company. But they did work backwards, as you just described, and they altered their curriculum to fit that particular situation. That's kind of a scary thing because if they back out on you or for some reason, you know, they go belly up or it's a one-shot deal, then you better find another tank manufacturer real fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good idea. Any other comments?
Rita?
Yes, Rita.
I wanted to say, we try not to look at it as a job, but more as a career, where you don't let your licenses expire. You keep current and you keep learning. You just can't take a course and expect to know everything. It's an ongoing process.
Right. A lot of times when you, if you could get into the interview and you can, I don't want to say name drop, but if you know the words, mm-hmm. that employer, if the 10 guys behind you that are interviewing for that job don't know the words, they don't know what HAZ Whopper means, or they don't know about 19-10-120, they don't know about confined space or OSHA 10. And you say, I'll tell you all about it. In fact, I'm certified. What's your advantage over those 10 behind you? And if it's not even that, it's we did a boot camp, and I went through training that you could not be tardy for. It was 9 to 5 every day. We had circles where we would talk to other people in the group. And again, you're comparing your credentials, having gone through this program, with your competitors who are looking for that same type job. You definitely have an advantage. Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, we're 15 minutes over our time, but if you have questions, one, just respond to the notes with whatever questions you have, or send them to Heather. If you'd like to tell us about something you're doing, and we could share it with the group, just, again, respond to the notes with that. Oh, just FYI, this is what happened last week, or this is what we're doing, or this is the problem we just had, and it'd be great to share it with everyone. So,
okay.
Well, if there's nothing else anyone wants to talk about, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Which
I have
is,
a quick question.
Yes, sir.
My question is for Ken. Ken, what are the three types of resumes that you guys develop for your clients, your students?
Wow. I mean, that's a good question. And one can be for, you know, general labor. One can be more specific for, you know, RCRA, Resource Conservation Recovery Act certification that we have, which is like a chemical hazardous waste assistant, because that's like an 8-hour certification. And then you got the more skilled resume that is targeted for, you know, the HAZ Whopper 40 and, you know, a higher skilled position. So if that helps, It's just based upon the person and the field they want to go in.
Okay. All right.
It could be a technical, and it could be an assistant. It could be a skill position, if I could just identify each resume like that.
You know, when we get into placement, we'll be talking about that. A lot of it is you as program manager and the workforce developer can get to know your employers and find out what they're looking for. And again, it's kind of like reverse of what Ken said, work backwards. And he said, once you find out what your employers are looking for, you might say, you're not going to send everybody to them, but you might say, I've got a guy that I think would work for you.
Right.
And you want to send them to interviews, and we'll talk about this later, that where they're going to succeed. You don't want to send anyone on an interview where they don't have a chance. Definitely.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much, both of you, Mike and Ken.
Okay, no problem.
Well, you all have a good week, and we'll hopefully hear from you one way or another soon.
Okay, you too, Mike.
Okay.
Everybody.
Thanks for calling.
Have a good one.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye. Bye.